Horrible Christmas, a horrible histories book read by Vanna Vance, by Terry Deary, illustrated by Martin Brown. Introduction. In the words of the delightful Mr. Scrooge in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, "Bah, humbug! Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer." He's right, of course. When it comes to this Christmas, a lot of people haven't finished paying for last Christmas. One day of burnt turkey and shriveled pudding in return for 364 days of debt. Bah, humbug. What was the charming Scrooge's answer? Simple. You may like to try it. Every idiot who goes around with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding. It may be a bit tricky getting a pot big enough and then getting the idiot into the pot. The trouble with boiling idiots in a pudding pot is that it ruins the taste of the pudding. Never mind. Mr. Scrooge tells you what to do when the Christmas idiot has been boiled to death. He should be buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should. Sadly, Mr. Scrooge turns out to be a kind and giving old wrinkly under all that tough talk. He changes. But some sensible people would like to keep the old Scrooge spirit alive. They'd like to set fire to all Christmas puddings and stick them up the pudding cooks' noses. They love to put all the terrible presents in a pit and cover them with reindeer droppings. Those people need some really good excuses to be cruel at Christmas. They need a book filled full of the foulest facts you can find on this festive folly. So next time someone wishes them a happy Christmas, they can stuff them like a turkey with the truth about this sick and silly season. To be the new Scrooge of the 21st century, they need a horrible history of Christmas. And here it is. Thanks. Bah, humbug. Christmas carols. Bothered by carol singers, croaking old crows, or begging brats? What can you say to make them stop? Tell them carols aren't a Christmassy thing to sing. Say, hang on, carol singers. Good King Wenceslas looked out. Wenceslas was a duke, not a king. Wenceslas I of Bohemia was not famous for collecting firewood for oldies too decrepit to pick their own. That was just a story made up in the 1800s to fit an old tune from the 1300s. In AD 929, Wenceslas spread Christianity through Bohemia. This annoyed his mother and his brother, who met him at a church door and chopped Wenceslas to pieces. Wence was only 22 years old. He didn't do a lot of gathering winter's fuel after that. And, by the way, the Feast of Stephen is December 26th. Away in a manger, no crib for a bed. Jesus was not born in a stable, he was born in a cave. That's because Joseph's first wife and their six kids made his house too crowded. At least that's what Irish monk Father Jerome O'Connor reckons, and he's one of the world's top Bible archaeologists. And in St. Matthew's story in the Bible, Jesus was born in a house. Hark the herald angels sing. There were no singing angels around when Jesus was born. The reporters wrote in Greek of angelos being there, but that's not Greek for angels, it's Greek for messenger. Joseph and Mary had their baby, and there were shepherd friends in the area looking after their sheep. The angelos were probably kids who shouted up to their dads on the hillsides, "Oi, Dad, Joseph and Mary have had their baby. It's a boy." Father Jerome O'Connor again. Clever feller, isn't he? We three kings of the Orient are. They were not kings, just wise men. And how do you know there were three? There could have been a dozen or more. The Bible says, Jesus was born in the town of Bethlehem in Judea during the time when Herod was king. Soon afterwards, some men who studied the stars came from the east to Jerusalem and asked, "Where's the baby born to be the king of Jews? We saw his star when it came up in the east, and we have come to worship him." Yes, all right, three gifts are mentioned, and that's why painters in the Middle Ages showed three wise men, one gift each. But there could have been a few other wise blokes there who used all their gold getting their camels into the multi-safari camel park. Here we come a wassailing. A wassail was just a pagan excuse for awful adults to get drunk as a skunk. It had nothing to do with Christmas or the birth of Jesus. Wassail was a drink of ale, nutmeg, honey, and ginger. Wassailers arrive at a house at Christmas and the owner must offer them the drink. He must say, "Ways hail," Old English for "be healthy." The wassailers reply, "Drink hail, drink and be healthy." To make the wassail drink more chewy, there should be pieces of toast floating on top. The wassail bowl is passed round, the first guest takes out a piece of toast and wishes everyone good health. That's where we get the idea of drink a toast to someone today. Then everyone drinks and moves on to the next house to scrounge some more. Wassailing, huh? Did you know, El, the carol Silent Night was first played on a guitar. It was supposed to be played on a church organ in Austria, but the organ was powered by a fellow on a bellows and mice would chew through the bellows. They probably wanted a silent night's sleep. A guitar had to be used instead. There's another story that some nasty human deliberately wrecked the bellows, but the mice story is nice. Cool carols. If you were going carol singing, liven things up with these versions. Good King Senseless last looked out on the feast of Stephen. A snowball gave his ear a clout. He cried, "I will get even." We three kings of Orient are, one in a taxi, one in a car, one on a scooter, blowing his hooter, smoking a big cigar. While shepherds bashed their socks by night, all watching ITV, the angel of the Lord came down and switched to BBC. Did you know, Elle, the reason why carol singers knock on your door and pester you when you're trying to watch your favorite Christmas soap on television is because they were once banned from churches. The word carol is from a Greek word meaning sing and dance in a circle. The medieval priests were upset by carol singers who danced through their churches at Christmas. The priests claimed the carol singers were doing the work of the devil and threw them out. So the garbling oysters went round houses instead, and they still do. Knock, knock, who's there? Carol singer. Carol singer, do you know what hymn of the Flaming Night it is? No, but you hum it and I'll sing it. Six songs. Well, of course you could sing anti-Christmas songs like this American hit, written in 1977 by Randy Brooks. Grandma got run over by a reindeer. Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had hoof prints on her forehead and incriminating claws marks on her back. It's not Christmas without Grandma. All the family's dressed in black, and we just can't help but wonder, should we open up her gifts or give them back? I've warned all my friends and neighbors, better watch out for yourselves. They should never give a license to a man who drives a sleigh and plays with elves. Christmas history. People say Christmas is a tradition. We've always done it. But that's just not true. Tell them the truth. 6 B.C. Jesus is born probably 6 years before the birth of Christ. He was born when the Romans were doing a census, counting all the people in their empire, wasn't he? That's how Mary and Joseph ended up in Bethlehem with no room at the pub. The Romans only did that check once every 13 years, so he could have been born in 20 B.C., 6 B.C., or A.D. 8. The historian's favorite is 6 B.C. A child is born, probably. A.D. 313. Constantine becomes the first Christian Roman emperor. The Romans already had wild parties at the end of December to celebrate the days getting longer again. December 25th was the sun's birthday, and the parties were mega. The Christians pinched that party date to celebrate the birth of Jesus, even though that wasn't his birthday. The Romans didn't mind. They still had an excuse to get drunk. 430. People have been celebrating the birth of Jesus in January and March, as well as December. In 430, the church in Rome fixes it at December 25th. Churches are worried that people are enjoying Christmas in the old Roman sun god way, eating, boozing, and dancing around in animal skins or other weird costumes. Sun, who cares? Let's party. 1038. Christus Massae, written in a Saxon book, the first record we have of Christmas in writing. 1066. William the Conqueror has himself crowned at Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day. The lords inside give a mighty cheer. The guards outside think there's a rebellion going on. They attack and burn down houses in the area. Not very Merry Christmas. I got a crown. What did you get for Christmas? 1519. The turkey finally arrives in Europe. Good news for Christmas eaters, bad news for the turkeys. 1531. Henry VIII's Unlawful Games Act bans every kind of sport on a Christmas day, except archery, because Englishmen should be ready to go into battle at any time with the foul French or the savage Scots. So you can't have a timid game of tennis, but you can practice murdering someone with a bloodletting bow. As time went on, people pleaded to have their favorite sports on Christmas Day, but most of these requests were turned down. The only one that was allowed was leaping and vaulting. 1637. Christmas abolished in Britain. Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan Parliament passed a law to ban it. December 25th was to be a working day, and Parliament met every Christmas from 1634 to 1656. There were riots across the country. Christmas church services were broken up by armed soldiers. Shopkeepers came off worst. If they closed, then soldiers forced them to open. And if they opened, then rioters forced them to close. Christmas decorations in London were torn down and burned by the mayor, probably at night because he sounds a bit of a nightmare. Christmas puddings were banned. You weren't allowed to make them, so people just ordered them from Europe. The unhappy people got together a petition and said, if we could not have our Christmas day, we would have the king back on his throne, fighting Christmas talk. We wish you a merry Tuesday. 1659. In America, the Puritan leaders banned Christmas in some states. A New England state law said, whosoever shall be found observing any such day as Christmas shall pay 5 shillings as a fine. And you could buy a lot of stuffing for 5 shillings. Other states like Virginia did not ban Christmas, and they were probably the first to eat turkey for Christmas dinner. The banned Christmas laws were dropped in 1681, but it wasn't until 1836 that Alabama said December 25th was to be a holiday, and then everyone in the USA copied them. 1660. Christmas is back in Britain. The writer Samuel Pepys says he went to church where the priest was whinging on, "People are having happy Christmas parties and forgetting that it is really a religious day. Nothing much changes then." 1790s. People begin to lose interest in Christmas. They think it's a bit silly and old-fashioned. 1833. Charles Dickens publishes A Christmas Carol, and suddenly Victorian Britain decides Christmas is a wonderful idea. 1913. The first Christmas of the First World War in football breaks out. German and British enemies meet on frozen ground between their trenches and play a Christmas game of footy. The two sides sing carols to one another on Christmas Eve. They have a shooting contest, shooting at tin cans instead of each other. Brits swap their Christmas puddings for barrels of German beer. Germans put up trees lit with candles in their trenches. Enemies meet in the middle of the battle area and exchange addresses, promising to write to one another after the war. The generals, who probably preferred posh rugby and cricket, say that soldiers will be shot if they don't start shooting bullets instead of balls. They think the truce is all over. It is now. Boom. Christmas crackers. The crackers man. Ever wonder who invented Christmas crackers? Here's one story. A young man called Tom Smith owned and worked in a sweet shop in London. Tom sold sugared almonds, each one wrapped in bright paper like the French ones. They sold well and he noticed that young men were buying them to give to their sweethearts. He began placing love mottos on small slips of paper inside the sweet wrapping. You know the sort of thing. "I think you are as gorgeous as a pint of beer." Or, "Will you marry me and do my washing and ironing?" In 1846, Tom began to wonder if he could cash in on Christmas. Instead of sweets, why not wrap little toys and novelties in the twisted wrapping? Tom experimented and had the idea of making wrapping that could be pulled apart. The Christmas toy in a pull-apart wrapper was a success, but Tom was still not satisfied. One evening, he was standing in front of the fire when he kicked his Christmas log into place. There was a shower of sparks and the log crackled and almost set Tom's trousers on fire. "That's it," Tom cried. "Well, I needed something in my wrapping that will make a crack when it is pulled open." He worked with several chemicals until at last he found one that was safe, easy to make, and would make a noise just loud enough to amuse his customers and not scare the pants off them. The new crackers were a huge success, and Tom had to open a factory to produce them, and he lived happily ever after. What a nice story. Who told the story? Tom Smith. But there is mention of crackers in a story published in 1831. 5 years before, Tom snapped and popped into history. So was Tom a fibber? Who knows? By the start of the 1900s, crackers were packed in theme boxes, a Charlie Chaplin set, an Arctic exploration set, probably full of polar mints, an aeroplane set, they probably flew off the shelves, a cinema set, probably with no snapping them as they were silent movies in those days, and even a set for leap year, the year when women can propose marriage to men, which had rings and fake marriage certificates inside. The world's worst jokes. We should all be grateful to old Tom for crackers, except for one thing. He had the idea of putting jokes in the crackers, and they are usually the worst, cringe-making jokes in the history of the world. Here are two cracker jokes from Victorian times. What is a fisherman's favorite musical instrument? A castanet. What do you give a deaf fisherman? A herring aid. You will find this sort of joke scattered throughout the book. The publishers take no blame for these jokes that are about as funny as a slap on the ear with a wet kipper. What's the cruelest thing about Christmas? The jokes and the crackers. Christmas kids. Christmas crib. Lots of schools and shops and city centers have models of a stable with Joseph, Mary, three wise men, shepherds, and their animals. But the first time a nativity scene was copied, they used live animals. And a live saint who played all the parts except baby Jesus. In 1223, St. Francis of Assisi in Italy wanted to find a way to tell the local people the Christmas story. So he set up a crib in a cave on the mountainside with live animals and a wooden doll for Jesus. He then acted as shepherds, kings, angels, and so on. A sort of one-man Christmas show. It was a smash hit and he had to repeat it every Christmas. He decided to bring in a second actor to play one of the roles. Which one? A. A talking lonely lamb. B. The baby Jesus. Or C. Mary. Answer B. St. Francis used a real baby. When the crib babies grew up, they were always treated well, so he chose orphans from the local children's home. Years later, the King of Naples in Italy made figures for a Christmas crib himself, and the Queen and court ladies dressed them. In other years, the King paid famous artists and sculptors to make wonderful new figures. Blimey, who made you? Gradually, the custom spread to other countries, especially to France, Spain, Portugal, and southern Germany. Since the days of St. Francis, some of the cribs have been a bit odd. In Munich, after a heavy fall of snow at Christmas time, a snow crib is built. There's a permanent underwater crib in Amalfi, Italy, where life-size figures have been placed in the form of a nativity scene on the seabed. At a special exhibition of cribs in France in 1966, a space crib was set up. The nativity scene was set on a distant planet, and the three wise men were shown arriving in a rocket. The animals. talking about cribs, where did the idea of the animals come from? Is it in the Bible? No, animals are not mentioned in the Bible stories about Christmas. It all started 1,200 years after the birth of Christ when a carol described how the donkey carried Mary to Bethlehem and the other animals looked after her and the new baby in the stable. The cow gave her the manger for a bed and hay for a pillow and warmed the baby Jesus with her breath. Have you ever smelt a cow's breath? Phew, what a way to be warmed to sleep. An electric blanket is better every time. Still, it was very kind of the cow who must have got a bit peckish. The sheep gave her wool for a blanket, and the doves cooed him to sleep. On that first Christmas night, a legend says, the animals and birds talked about the wonderful news. People said they spoke in Latin, of course, because that was the language used in church. Moo, bah. Can you work out which animal spoke which words? The clue is in the sound. The conversation went like this. 1. Christus natus est, Christ is born. 2. Ubi, where? 3. Bethlehem. A. The sheep. B. The cockerel. C. The ox. Answers. 1. B. Christus natus est. Cock-a-doodle-doo. Get it? 2. C. Ubi. Boo. 3. A. Bethlehem. Ah. Every Christmas Eve since then, it was said, the cattle in their sheds fell on their knees at the stroke of midnight and talked in human language. Humans couldn't listen in, though. Shame, it could have been interesting. Sorry, my voice is rough, but I'm a little hoarse. You're such a bear. That's a foul cough you've got. You're being a bit sheepish. A tissue. Duck. I was only kidding. Don't nanny me. I'm dogged with a nasty cold. Bees gathered in their hive and hummed the 100th psalm. Why did they hum it? Maybe they didn't know the words, but never tried to listen to any of them. It was said to be very unlucky. The baby bath. For over 1,000 years, painters have shown the scene of the birth of Jesus. Until the 1500s, these paintings often showed baby Jesus having his first bath. Then, in the middle of the 1500s, a meeting of priests banned pictures of Jesus in the bath. Why? A. The baby Jesus had no clothes on and they thought it was a bit rude. B. Jesus was so pure he would never have needed a bath. C. Baths hadn't been invented when Jesus was born, so it was a daft thing to show. Answer. B. The meeting was called the Council of Trent, and it lasted from 1535 till 1563, which is an awful lot of talking. Christmas Star. You may have heard that a star appeared in the sky over Bethlehem and guided the wise men to a stable where Jesus was born. If that's true, then it was a true miracle. God made a star, although it might have been easier to make a map book with an arrow saying, "This way, lads." Astronomers say there were no comets around the time of Christ's birth. But if he was born in 6 BC, then three large planets, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, were close together in a triangle. That could have been the strange sign that got the wise men going. Did you know, well, it's a bit rough being born on Christmas Day. You get all your presents at once, and you have to share your party with the world. But there is one good thing about it. An old superstition says, those who are born on Christmas Day cannot see spirits. Ah! What? So anyone born on Christmas Day can happily spend the night in the graveyard and have a peaceful night's sleep, except for the sound of the worms munching away at the bodies of corpses. Funeral frankincense. You can understand why the three wise men brought gold for the baby Jesus, but what were these frankincense and myrrh things? They were very rare types of gum from trees. They were as valuable as gold and made pleasant perfumes in the days when people could be very smelly. The Romans used frankincense for their funerals. How? A. They burned it with the bodies at funerals. B. They dressed the corpse of a dead friend with perfumed robes. C. They put it in the coffin so the corpse would have riches in the afterlife. Answer. A. The smell of cremated human flesh was so horrible they burned frankincense to make it more pleasant. Question. What's the best ever Christmas present? Answer. A broken drum, because you can't beat it. Childermas Day. Not everybody was happy at the thought of a baby born in Bethlehem. He's born to be king, some happy people said. He can't be, King Herod said. I'm king. This town's too small for the two of us. What can he do, they asked him. A king's got to do what a king's got to do. I'll murder the little feller. But you don't know what he looks like, his counselors argued. We haven't got his picture because cameras haven't been invented. Anyway, the little heroes all look the same when they're a couple of days old. Herod had a horrible leer on his face, probably, as he said, so murder the lot of them. Every baby boy under the age of 2 you can get your hands on. That way we're bound to get him. Joseph and Mary packed their bags and their baby and fled, of course. Meanwhile, the massacre went on and lots of innocent babies died. That's why December 28th is known as Holy Innocence Day or Childermas Day. What you should tell adults. In some parts of Europe, Childermas Day was celebrated by choosing a boy to be bishop for the day. He and his friends were in charge. What would you do if you were top tot of the town? The lads were showered with presents. The custom died out in the 1600s, but you may want to see it revived. His Holiness demands more sweeties. What you mustn't tell adults. December 28th has been called an unlucky day. In many countries, no one would marry on that day, and no one would start a new building. Edward V of England even refused to be crowned on that day. It was an old English custom that died out in the middle of the 1700s. Children had to be reminded of Harold's cruelty, so children were beaten. Some adults, especially teachers, may well enjoy seeing this custom revived. Better not tell them about it, eh? DAF data. Christmas is a time of enormous eating and stupendous spending. Can you work out the right answers to these excessive Christmas facts? 1. Put them end to end and they'd stretch from the Tower of London to the Pyramids of Egypt. What? A. The mince pies we eat every Christmas. B. The 20-pound notes taken from bank tills on a Christmas shopping day. C. The fir trees we murder for Christmas trees. 2. The British Isles could sink under the extra 158,000 tons we put on them every Christmas. Tons of what? A. Tinsel. B. Human fat. C. Christmas party crisps. 3. British people buy 1.6 billion of them every year. What? A. Christmas cards. B. Christmas tree lights. C. Plastic sledges. But I want a yellow one. 4. Britain spends 350 million pounds on them every Christmas. What? A. Mince pies. B. Chocolates. C. Presents for favorite teachers. 5. They've been on Earth 9 million years longer than humans. What? A. Reindeer. B. Turkeys. C. Santa's elves. 6. Put them end to end and they'd go almost 4 times around the world. What? A. The Christmas wrapping paper bought each year. B. The toilet paper used on Christmas Day. C. Old men pretending to be Father Christmas in shops. 7. British people take 5 million of them at Christmas. What? A. Indigestion tablets. B. Baths. C. Seats in church. A. 8. Put them end to end and they'd stretch to the moon. What? A. The rolls of sticky tape we buy for Christmas. B. The Christmas puddings we buy each Christmas. C. Christmas dinner Brussels sprouts. Answers 1B. Half a billion pounds worth of 20-pound notes would stretch 2,188 miles, if they didn't blow away, of course. 2B. Christmas Day and Boxing Day lunches add an average 2 or 3 kilos to each person, making a total of 158,000 tons. As for the tinsel, one small factory makes over 23,000 miles of the stuff. Enough to go to Australia and back. 3A. That's 130 million on the busiest days. Imagine the size of the postman's sack needed to carry that lot. 4B. Enjoy your Christmas chocolate and don't worry. There are millions of pounds worth of mince pies to eat, too. 5B. Of course you can tell if you're unlucky enough to get a 10-million-year-old turkey because it'll be a bit tough. 6A. A cheap way to give your loved one the world. Wrapped. That wrapping paper costs just 155 million pounds. 7A. That's just one popular make of indigestion tablet. Some people may even take the tablets in the bath. 8A. That's over 230,000 miles, as you probably know. But who went to the moon with a tape measure to check the distance?